Ow.
Coming soon for Christmas, Frankie's Wake Up DVD for tired parents everywhere.
When I was trying to get pregnant.
Don't tell me you did that before you tried to get pregnant.
No, but...
People can't see the sort of dance you were doing. But trust me, it didn't feel like that kind of dance.
But, you know, I went on a fitness kick type thing and I bought one of those fitness DVDs. I like doing exercise, but I'm not like a runner. I don't want to go out anywhere or do, you know...
I like doing exercise, so long as I can do it sitting on my sofa with a packet of biscuits.
Exactly. Okay. Hello. Hello. Hi.
Wow, that dance really changed the way you say hi.
Hello. You're listening to the Doing It For The Kids podcast, where we swear a bit too much and talk a bit too fast about freelance life with kids in the mix. I'm Frankie, and this is Steve.
Yes, hello. Each week, we take a question from the Doing It For The Kids community, do our best to answer it. But we also take your comments as well, which we love to get, which means we start each episode with last week's question. Last week's question was...
How to avoid friction with your other half when you're working lots of evenings and weekends.
Oh, God, yeah.
It was a good one.
Rebecca Lismer got in touch. She says, communication is everything. We start messages with Kiwi or Kihi. Kiwi, keep important wife informed. Kihi, keep important husband informed. I like that. Though it does suggest that you have multiple wives and husbands.
Important and not important.
We start messages with Kiwi or Kihi that include work commitments or plans. Going climbing, appointments, meetings, as well as adding stuff to the joint calendar. We message each other from upstairs, downstairs, his garden office, because then it is in writing and it isn't drowned out by a small human screaming, toddler repeating himself for the 40th time, / dog barking at invisible postmen.
Polly Tree says, I was in this place about 18 months ago. I had an extended pity party and then I pulled myself together and organised the shit out of it. This included... deciding how many hours I needed to work each week and being clear with my family that if I couldn't get that during the day, I would need to work at night. Having one night a week where my partner is in charge and I can do work, so no matter who is sick or off school or on holiday or whatever, I always have the whole evening to get stuff done. Getting really good at managing my clients' expectations, being clear when I can and can't take calls, factoring in time for the unexpected when delivering a project. Not feeling guilty that I work reduced hours, I'm raising a human at the same time for fuck's sake. Apart from one night a week, switching off from when it's family time and not feeling guilty about that either. Having ad hoc childcare on hand to help if I have a busy week or an important call, saying no to work that I couldn't deliver and passing it on to other freelancers, and being realistic about what I can achieve professionally whilst my child is still young. I have a monthly crisis about it, but it's short-lived.
Kathy Wassell says, it's depressing how much of a common problem this is. I am working on a time machine... but in the absence of one, cold hard facts tend to work for me. E.g., you work X hours, the kids are with me X hours, I have to do X, X and X, I need to do X hours of work to earn Y. There is no time in the week to do this other than X, Y and Z. Suck it up! I presume the suck it up was aimed at...
their other half, yeah. And Amy Rutter says, thank you so much for this episode. I've been feeling totally stressed and overwhelmed with the full-time mum and freelancing juggle and wanted time to myself, but I'm not great at communicating that to my other half. We listen to the podcast together. I love this, by the way. So good. We listen to the podcast together and Frankie essentially did it for me. As a result of you mentioning your kid-free Saturday mornings, we're now sorting a morning this week for me to be by myself. Not yet a regular thing, as it's often difficult to know which days I need to work, but it's a start, and it'll be the first I've had since my son was born. I'm in the process of booking in a massage and researching nearby coffee shops. Bloody bliss.
Oh, yay! I'm intrigued. Did Amy listen to that first and then pretend she hadn't and then sit down with her other half and say, oh, should we listen to this? I don't know what it is. Do you know, like...
Yeah, because it's risky otherwise, isn't it? Just like getting you both to sit down to listen to it based on the title of the episode alone. I mean,
yeah,
you don't know what's... that could backfire.
If nothing else ever good comes of this podcast, you know, there's a high chance that'll happen. That one thing alone would have justified everything.
Amy's had a massage, so it's all good.
Yeah.
So this week, my 14-month-old is getting... She's getting four teeth at once. As I described it to nursery yesterday, I was like, is she okay today? Because she's hardcore teething. Like, she doesn't normally dribble, but she gets through, like, T-shirts every 10 minutes at the moment. I had a meeting yesterday about potential sponsors for doing it for the kids. And I'd had about 3 hours sleep, which wasn't ideal. When you're trying to be, like, your best self.
I know, but you're living the brand, right?
But I put my gold shoes on, went out and did it.
Our daughter was auditioning for the nativity. The next day, I'm walking across the playground. Of course, I was late, so lots of other children are already leaving. And I can hear them go, oh, you're an angel, are you? Oh, you're going to be a sheep, are you? And all of this sort of stuff. And then I get to where her classroom is, and she sees me, and she comes running out with the biggest smile I've ever seen. I'm Mary! I've never seen her so excited and happy. It was lovely. It was proper joyous. Anyway, now we have about 4 weeks of hearing the same songs being practiced at home.
Over and over.
That afternoon, she was already getting me to buy a Mary costume off Amazon. Apparently, the Mary Poppins one I got isn't the right look she was going for.
My son's only in reception. He started in September. You know, we get all the millions of notifications from school on email. I seem to get like 6 emails from school a day. And I got one email that was titled like Christmas show. Competitive mum came out hardcore because I saw that. I saw that subject line and was like, oh my God, he's been cast in the nativity.
Oh my God, my son is Joseph.
Yeah, exactly. And then I opened the email and it was literally like, just a reminder that the show is on X date.
Ah. So it wasn't them asking for his equity card.
No, exactly.
Okay, this week's question comes from, oh, it's anonymous. It says, from anonymous, not only because some of my current and potential clients may listen to the podcast, but also because I want you to have another opportunity to conjure up a random detective name. I feel like we should explain, by the way, because if you're only just starting listening at this point, the random detective thing is because very early on we decided that saying anonymous is just a bit boring. It's more fun if you make up a name, but if you don't make up a name, we will make up a name for you.
And we've fallen into the habit of detective names from some fantasy website.
Yeah, so fantasy name generator, here we go.
Have they got a clicker at the bottom that tells you how many hits they get?
You might want to approach them for sponsorship.
Yeah.
Detective Kerry Robinson, Blake Cox, Tyler Freeman, Avery Walker, Harper McLeod.
Done.
Harper McLeod says, can we have the turning down work conversation? I've reached the stage where I can, to some extent, pick and choose my work. However, I'm a people pleaser and still find it difficult to say no. For argument's sake, let's just say my job involves drawing things. But I'm happy to be a detective if you insist. Even when you're desperate for work, let's face it, there are projects that are more trouble than they're worth.
Amen.
Even worse, some projects could end up costing you money or be professionally disastrous. I'll give you a recent scenario. I was speaking to a potential client on the... I feel like this should be... This is so well written, but it feels like Detective McLeod needs to say it. I'll give you a recent scenario. I was working late, speaking to a potential client on the phone, and all these red flags were popping up. The project was ultra boring and would eat into my capacity for interesting projects. The client was awkward, querying the relevance of my questions. Outside, I could hear a bus gun underneath a street lamp. Something wasn't right by the laundry. Sorry, back to their letter. I was trying to suggest that another professional would be better suited to their project. Then they dropped the bombshell. Extreme close-up. But you're doing work for my friend, aren't you? As it turns out, yes, I am doing work for their friend. But their friend is lovely, and their project is really interesting. So, here's the question.
Back to Steve.
When you get an inquiry and you just get a bad feeling about the work of a client, how do you turn down the project without damaging your reputation? I'm loathed to do things that some industries appear to do. For example, give a silly big quote to scare them off. Don't bother speaking to this detective. They're far too expensive. Ghost them, i.e. don't bother contacting this detective. They never got back to me. Do you see what they're doing here, by the way? I'm now saying the things which that client might say to other people.
Indeed.
You see?
Reputation right. management.
Tell them you're too busy. And then the client will say, don't bother contacting this detective. They're far too busy. What you really want is, you should give this detective a call. They were lovely on the phone and made some great suggestions, but ultimately couldn't help me. They may be able to help you. Frankie, Steve, your thoughts and potty mouth ramblings would be much appreciated. Yours, Detective Harper McLeod.
I don't want to be negative, but are we asking for the world on the stick here? What do you think, Steve? Just because they've covered all the, like, things that I would tell them to do. Which is true in that then you're giving a message to that person which might be relayed to other people, being too expensive, being too busy. How do you tell them you don't want to work with them without that being a negative thing? How do you spin it into a positive? That's what we're asking here, isn't it?
I feel like the best of the options which they have given is the one about saying you're too busy. Except that the phrase too busy isn't the phrase that we should be using. Mm. It's the fact that you're already booked up until this point, mm-hmm. or you already have commitments.
That can massively backfire because they might turn around and say, oh, don't worry, we'll push it back 6 months. I'll call you in March.
I was going to say, what I would do as part of the conversation where you're having the red flags is say, what's your time frame on this? Is there a deadline? Mm-hmm. Is there something mm-hmm. you're working towards? Get a feel of that. And then you can feed that into your answer. Look, I'm tied up until the year 2025.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, look, I only like to take on projects where I know I'm going to be a perfect fit for it, and I don't feel like this is going to be a great fit for me. I want you to get the best thing that you can have.
Suddenly feels like dating, doesn't it? How you turn down the date.
But it's like you're turning that onto the positive for them. Like, I don't feel like I'm the right person for this project. The trouble here is that ordinarily we'd be saying, why don't you refer on to somebody else? But presumably you don't want to do that because they're a red flag client who you don't think are good.
Yeah, because my go-to, if I'm genuinely not the right fit for somebody because I don't have the right skills or I'm genuinely too busy, I'll have people that I genuinely want to recommend and I think would do a great job. But I would never send who I fear to be a difficult client to essentially one of my mates who yes, has similar exactly. skills to me, because that politically isn't a great move. Slight side note, but whatever recommendation I make, I always try and check with that person first.
By the way, your webcam has now slipped so much that all I can see is your ceiling fan.
There we go.
Oh, there you are.
Hi.
Another thing they said was give a silly big quote to scare them off. No, I think like you shouldn't do that because you're right. They might just say to other people, oh, they're way too expensive.
But is it such a bad thing if that particular client thinks you're too expensive? So when I first started out, my rate was insanely low and I would do work for pretty much anybody. And I did some work for some really difficult people who then, because I did a good job for no money, referred me to all their mates. And then suddenly I had emails from loads of people who I didn't want to work with at a rate I wasn't happy being paid. So is it such a bad thing to alienate that client through price if it means they won't then go on to... You want to work with people that, yes, will recommend you and you have a good fit, etc., but you also want people that are in the right sorts of networks, that is the type of work that you want to be doing and the type of people you want to continue working with. So by using price as a deterrent, that can actually be a good way to do it. I know we're undermining the question, aren't we?
It's so hard. Because equally, this person, this imaginary client, we're thinking that they're going to give that much of a shit about you. That they're going to not refer. Do you want their referral? Do
exactly.
we care
That's
about
kind of what I'm
referral?
Saying. Yeah. But, it's a good point. Because this Detective McLeod says they're a people pleaser, right? So this is tied into the fact that they don't want to come across as a dick, ultimately, because they're a people pleaser. They want everyone to like them. Whatever they're being asked to do, they want to come away from that positively. Which, for the record, hands up, I can relate. But as you say, like, if this client is genuinely throwing all the red flags at you, not to say, I'm not giving you like an excuse to be a knob. I'm just like, saying, is it so, yeah, what you just said. Is it so bad that they won't go on to refer you necessarily?
I don't think there's perhaps anything wrong with most of these options, apart from ghosting them.
Yes.
It's just how you frame them and say them so that you're in control of them, so that you still leave that person with a good feeling about them, so that you still sound like you care about their project, so that you're still treating them with respect, so that they still go away feeling positive about their experience of you. And then that means they're not going to badmouth you, and they might refer you. But it's more the bad mouthing that we're worried about, right? And they're not going to do that because you've treated them with respect and you've left them feeling good.
I think there's a bit of a freelance affliction around saying no generally. The feast or famine thing, take all the jobs, do all the jobs, never say no. There's that kind of like, you never know when everything's going to dry up mentality. But there's also like, I don't know if it's the word freelancer or what, but I think a lot of us have this feeling that we're there to serve service-based businesses. Like, we're there to serve people, and it's quite a, like, one-way thing where we should say yes and whatever you want, sir. And there is that kind of approach to it. But actually, that's not the case at all. And I don't think you should be afraid of just saying, like, do you need an excuse is what I mean. Like, particularly if you're doing illustration, which is a really, like, stylized thing, personal thing. And they touch on the fact that they're clearly in demand and have good clients and whatever. Like, if somebody approaches you with that kind of, you're that kind of freelancer, are they expecting you to just say yes to everything? I don't know. What's my point? My point is...
What's your point? What's your point?
My point is...
Here comes the point. Here comes the point.
Shut you. And I've lost it now.
There went the point. Goodbye the point.
Yeah, my point is, it's a two-way process. And they have the right to turn around and say they don't want to work with you anymore, as much as you have the right to turn around and say, I don't want to take this job on. The default isn't they expect you to say yes and you have to talk your way out of that. It's up to you, particularly in an artistic, creative job, whether you decide to take that commission essentially on or not. I'm not saying that makes it easier to have that conversation, but like, I think you need to flick a switch sometimes in your brain. The automatic response doesn't have to be, yes, of course.
It is how that client departs your conversation feeling. How do they feel when they leave you? And so long as you've still been professional and pleasant and actually maybe even tried to be helpful and seemed to give a damn about their project because everybody wants to feel, you know, good about their business, you know, the client wants to feel good about, then that is the feeling that is going to linger with them when it comes to potentially talking about Harper McLeod in the future. Well, I tell you what. Have you had this experience? Let us know your thoughts.
Yeah, we need help.
Episode 25 on Facebook. Go search for it there and leave your comments, even if it's in the future. As we say, it's good to know your thoughts if you listen to this further down the line. Also on Twitter and Instagram, hashtag DIFTK podcast. But basically, just make sure you're following Frankie on both of those and get involved there too. Just, yeah, what have you done to try and leave people who you said no to with a good taste in their mouth? Does that sound wrong?
Yes.
It hasn't been a sound wrong.
And Steve just recorded his 199th episode of Being Freelance.
Yeah, check out Being Freelance, my other podcast where I chat to a different freelancer each week from around the world. But episode 200 is happening in London on Friday the 13th of December. If you would like to be there, then go to beingfreelance.com and click on events and you'll find the details there. But it's at the Underpinned Freelancers Christmas Party, which is a free Christmas party, so come along to that anyway. But opening it right at the beginning, the entree is going to be episode 200 being recorded live.
We'll be there in our array of bright colours and shoes. You'll spot us.
Were you ever in nativity and stuff?
No. I remember my year six one, because we did, this is so random, cowboys and cowgirls.
Very Christmassy.
Right, exactly. Did this big choreographed number, and I got to dance with the boy that I like massively fancied.
How exciting.
He had sweaty hands though.
Do you know, that means that he was excited too.
That's what I tell myself now, yeah.
Yeah.
I bet you were. I can see you as a sheep.
Thanks very much. I remember being in year six. I think I was a head teacher who took his pupils into space. I got turned into a tin of Spam, right?
What?
And the Spam could then still talk, and I had to have a microphone off stage and talk.
What?
As a tin of Spam. And the caretaker made this switch out of like a sewing machine pedal that I would have to press at the same time as talking. It triggered a light inside the big box of Spam on stage, so it looked like the box of Spam was talking. One of my greatest theatrical moments, box of Spam. Happy Christmas, everyone.
Sorry, but who wrote that? Like, was that an original piece by
caretaker? Exactly. It was like, I've got this Spam prop. What can we do?
This is my life's work.
Yeah, now you mention it, a bit weird.
Bit weird.